Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Free for All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. I love movie trailers. Do you like movie trailers? One thing I love about them is they give me a lot of buffer time if I'm getting late to the movie theater. Now, I haven't been to the theater in a while. I did go and see 1917 with a friend. That was awesome. Definitely deserved the Oscar for best cinematography. But I enjoy going to the theaters. The trailers, though, it's funny. It almost seems like you could get there and there's like 20 minutes of trailers, even though a while ago there was a rule put in place that trailers weren't supposed to be longer than 2 minutes. But I know a lot of them are fudging that rule or just completely disregarding it. But I don't mind because I love seeing the art that goes into a movie trailer to see, all right, can you get me sucked into watching this movie to get me to go to the trailer? And I love seeing the different kinds of trailers that are out there and also how movie trailers have evolved over time. In fact, I'm trying to find it. It's somewhere on my hard drives located tucked away. But I took part in a zombie film. You can go to imdb.com and search Trent Horn, and I think you'll find it there. One summer, I helped a friend make a zombie movie. It's one of the fun facts that gets listed about me at our annual conference. I was the director of cinematography, which is a glorified term for I was the cameraman, but I set up every shot. I shot every single frame of that film, and we spent all summer. It was, oh gosh, it was over 10 years ago we did this in Phoenix, Arizona, with the rest of the core team from our Life Teen group at St. Teresa Parish. And the film is called Life Room. My friend Eric was the director. I was director of cinematography. And I didn't really think it would actually happen. I said, yeah, sure. I thought I was getting into it. Like, oh, you know, we'll film a few scenes, have some fun with friends, whatever. Went to a park to have tryouts. And Eric went online and posted we were making a movie. And dozens of people, 2 or 3 dozen people, came to try out to be in our zombie movie. There was a guy there who had been in Jamie Foxx movies, like with speaking lines, and he brought his resume and headshots. And I was like, we are not making a real movie. I really wish someone else had been there with a video camera to make a movie about us trying to make a movie and just like how it was spiraling out of control. We eventually finished it and it's available. At least it's on IMDb. I don't know where you could find the DVD of it now. But that was our low-grade zombie movie that we made, which I would say some of the shots that are in it, I felt like they're pretty solid on my end to come up with inventive and interesting ways to shoot the film. I didn't write it. I didn't direct it. But I tried to always get really good camera angles in there. And I made a trailer for it to put online. And I felt like I could make a pretty decent film just out of that trailer. And that's what I love. When you watch trailers, you can always think to yourself, is it going to be a good movie? Because I love when a movie is so bad that the trailer can't even hide how bad it is. Because, I mean, you can take a bad movie and you can recut it and you can come up with all kinds of interesting things to draw from it and to make it something completely different. In fact, there's an entire genre of trailers online that recut classic films and try to make them look like they're in a different genre. The most famous one is called Scary Mary. It takes Mary Poppins, but recuts it to make a 1 minute long trailer that makes it look kind of like a horror film. And so I love that what you can do with trailers, it's so creative that you can take something, you can take a movie that's really good and make it look bad in the trailer. You can take a movie that's really bad and make it look really good in the trailer. And sometimes a movie is so bad, you can tell as you're watching the trailer, wow, this is going to be terrible. So now when I go to movies with friends, I give the movie a grade just based solely on the trailer itself. So let's dive right into it and talk about movie trailers, their history, the secrets behind them. According to Wikipedia, the first trailer shown in an American film theater was in November of 1913 when Nils Grönlund, the advertising manager for the Marcus Lowe theater chain, produced a short promotional film for the musical The Pleasure Seekers opening at the Winter Garden Theater on Broadway. As reported in a wire service story carried by the Lincoln, Nebraska Daily Star, the practice which Lowe adopted was described as an entirely new and unique stunt, and that moving pictures of the rehearsals and other incidents connected with the production will be sent out in advance of the show to be presented to the Lowe's picture houses and will take the place of much of the billboard advertising. So the first trailer was actually not for a movie. It was for a Broadway musical, and it was shown in movie houses. You remember the secret the secret history and secret world of movie theaters a few weeks ago or a few months ago. And I talked about how when people first went to the movies, it was kind of a high class affair. You know, you went to the movies. This was before you had the talkies, before you had audio and sound. So it was mostly reading cards, kind of like how today most people don't go to see foreign films that are in subtitles. So, I mean, Parasite won Best Picture, but did you see Parasite? I didn't. You probably didn't, because we still have an aversion to going to films where we have to read. It's like, if I was going to read, I'd go home and stay with a book and seem intelligent to people. I don't go to the movies to read. But so people would go back in the early part of the 20th century, and it was a high-class affair. So it made sense to advertise for a Broadway theater production in a movie theater production. So that's where the first one was. But then as more films became popular, people created more trailers, and they were shown as commercials or exciting things. After you watched the film, you get a commercial of what's coming next, hence why they were called trailers. You know, they trailed at the end of a film. They were shown at the end, whereas now we call them previews or coming attractions, and we see them at the beginning of the film or before the film actually starts. So let's talk then about the genre of the trailers and how they've evolved over time. The first classic trailers, what they would do, what's funny is a lot of them would almost show too much and would kind of reveal almost the entire story. And the goal was to show you everything amazing, which is a error that has been repeated in recent trailers, and get you to get in there. And there'd be an announcer who would be bombastic, larger than life, telling you, look how amazing this movie is. You need to be here for this movie. It's amazing, spectacular. So for example, here is the original theatrical trailer for the film Ben-Hur. So we'll play that right now.
Generation after generation of readers have been thrilled by Ben-Hur. No book save the Bible has ever been so widely read. Now, as a motion picture, Ben-Hur has inspired enthusiastic acclaim in every corner of the earth. In New York, in London, in Tokyo, and in Hollywood, the most honored motion picture in Academy Award history. Yes, the spectacle, the color, the excitement, the human drama of Ben-Hur has swept the world.
Yes, the spectacle of Ben-Hur. So, I love that. I love that old style of trailer. However, that began to change in the late 50s and early 1960s with kind of more avant-garde editing and film production techniques, the most famous of which would be the trailer for Stanley Kubrick's 1964 film Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. So this trailer, it was very new and novel for what it tried to do. It didn't reveal like the plot or give you an overall sense of the film. It was very mysterious. So I'll play that for you now, and I'll just recite the used a lot of text on screen, and then it would drop in out of context audio clips from the film itself. But you still didn't get quite an idea what it's about. You got the tone, you got a general idea of the plot, but you couldn't piece it all together, and it created an air of mystery that made people really interested in it. So here we go. So why did the U.S. bombers
attack Russia?
What was the first word said on the hotline?
Oh. Base.
10 females to each male.
So that one, before that, it's, I'm not going to try to say along with it because that might mess up your listening experience, but it's like, what does Dr. Strangelove want? And then he just says, 10 females for every male. Like, wait, what's going on here?
Coca-Cola machine.
Fluids.
Okay, so let's say I'll pause it right there. But you can see it's weird. And of course, you have Stanley Kubrick to thank to that behind all kinds of weird things. But that changed the idea of how you would make trailers, that trailers themselves would almost be kind of an art piece. And so you see more of that in the 60s and 70s. But then as you get into the mid-1980s and definitely going through the 90s and early 2000s, you had the trend of the movie voice guy. And there were a few people who did movie voice, but the most famous of them was Don LaFontaine. And he had that deep, resonating voice that he would talk into to give the overview. He was the in a world when. I mean, this is, I think when I did a comedy stand-up show at my church a while back. We did a talent show and we did comedy stand up. And I think I did my movie guy parody for that. Oh, I remember we once had a contest. I'd love to do this with friends again, where people would just throw out words. And then I would try to, and other people would try to create a movie trailer based on those words, the film. And I think for me, like they threw out the word souvenir cup. And so I'd have to try to do my voice and do a whole bit for that. Be something like that. In a world where drinks are overpriced, one man stood up. I'm not going to take it anymore. I'm going to get that souvenir cup back. They're not going to stop me. And of course, what I'm ripping from is Pablo Francisco does a comedy bit based on the movie Voice Guy, which kind of led to its demise. So before we get to that, though, let's talk about movie Voice Guy and how that was incorporated into trailers starting the late 80s, going to the 90s and early 2000s. According to Screen Rant, Don LaFontaine found his calling after spending time in the United States Army and working as a recording engineer for the Army Band and Chorus. When his time with the Army came to an end, LaFontaine moved on to working at the National Recording Studios in New York. In 1962, LaFontaine was asked to work on radio spots for Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove. He worked with Floyd Peterson to make the spots, and a lot of his ideas were used. Then he started an advertising firm. His voice was used in The Gunfighters of Casa Grande in 1964. He soon became the head of Kaleidoscope Films and started his own company in 1976, before later being hired by Paramount to be the voice of their trailers. And so there is I want to play for you now. This is a wonderful mashup of trailers with Don LaFontaine with the voice of movies. And he always has the same shtick that he uses when he describes movies, always in a world when one man. So here, I'm going to play that. And you can see it's a bunch of different LaFontaine trailers all mashed together. But you see, they all kind of follow the same general flow.
In a world in the year 2017,
in a time of tradition,
in a city where anything can happen,
in a war that isn't his,
every day in New York City,
on the Miami police force,
in the deep south,
from the sewers of Gotham,
from the rooftops of Gotham,
above Gotham,
within this skyscraper high above the city,
in a town driven by competition,
in a world that's powered by violence,
it's Christmas Eve in LA,
on New Year's Eve of the last decade of the 20th century,
detectives Mike Lowry and Marcus Burnett,
Special Agent John Krueger,
Harry Tasker,
and New York cop John McClane.
They're not just partners.
They were three cops who had nothing in common.
They are America's first line of defense.
But no matter how much you love them,
all that stands between a city and a disaster is a man,
a reluctant soldier,
an ex-con,
the perfect enemy.
They found him near a plane crash.
What if you couldn't remember?
And so then it just kind of goes on from there. And it became common, and that just became commonplace. And the problem was it became so common that the movie voice guy became a parody of himself. And so people started to make fun of it, and then it eventually dropped out of popularity. So here's two examples of people of trailers that make fun of the movie voice guy. This is for the Jerry Seinfeld film Comedian. And the trailer for Seinfeld's Comedian is just another movie voice guy, not Don LaFontaine, but another guy doing it. He's supposed to record the trailer in a sound booth, but he keeps getting corrected that this isn't that kind of movie.
In a world where laughter was king.
No, in a world, Jack.
What do you mean, no, in a world?
It's not that kind of movie.
Oh? Okay. In a land that...
No, in a land either.
In a time...
Nah, I don't think so.
In a land before time.
It's about a comedian, Jack.
One man.
No.
When your life is no longer your own.
What does that mean?
When everything you know is wrong.
That's wrong.
In an outpost.
No.
On the edge of space.
No space.
A girl.
No.
Two girls.
No.
Now.
No.
More than ever.
Stop it.
A renegade cop.
I hate you.
A robot renegade cop.
You're fired.
You're fired.
No, you're actually fired.
I'm fired.
Get out of the booth, Jack.
No, I like it in here.
So, but the idea here is that the trailers ended up becoming cliche with these kind of lines, with the same voice going behind them. And so, I'll give you one more example of people ripping into it. One of my favorite bits, it's from comedian Pablo Francisco. He, of course, is what inspired, like, when I did my comedy, you know, a little comedy bit at church. I'm kind of I'm definitely borrowing from him, or at least the technique of making fun of the movie voice guy. But definitely, it's fun to watch. Not everything in the bit is appropriate, some morally offensive elements, but I still think he does a great movie voice guy impersonation.
Well, that voice, that movie previous voice, that guy can take any topic, regardless what it is, and make it cool.
Put the lights out now. Put the spotlight on me. In the city, you must fight to survive. He sold tortillas on the corner. And the mob wanted him.
I don't know who this guy is, but I want him and his tortillas dead.
He had one chance, and his chance was to fight back. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Listen to me. These are my tortillas, and I'm not going to get them out here.
Do you listen to me? These are my tortillas. So then what came from that? So now what do we have with modern trailers? They don't do the movie voice guy. A lot of times now what you will do is similar to what they did, what Kubrick kind of did back in the 60s, was you take out of context dialogue in the film and use the out of context dialogue to kind of stitch together to do the narration. So instead of hiring someone to narrate the film, you either have text on the screen that narrates it, or you just get people, you know, I see a lot more of text being used to help with this, but a lot of the heavy lifting is done just by people in the movie itself taking clips of them talking and stitching that together to get the plot or description to people. Now, this can be unfortunate because sometimes it encourages writers to do exposition dumps, which I hate in films. I hate when there are people who are just explaining the plot just so we get it, but they talk in a way that average people don't speak. You know, say something like, "You look really upset today. I'm guessing that divorce will do that to you. It's only been 3 months, but Jenny, you've got to move on from Max when it comes to this." I'm like, that's not how normal people talk. So, but you see that more in modern trailers and other things. There's the Inception. This one's gone out of style, thankfully. But it was, you remember back in the day, everyone was doing the Inception note from Christopher Nolan's film Inception, the epic blah, blah. Other things, though, that'll come up in drama pieces, more like dramatic action films, not just straight up action films like Fast and the Furious, but like thrillers will have that. Also, there's always that solitary piano note at the beginning. Bing, ding, ding, bong, you know, that just to sharpen the mood. And then there's always somebody in a lot of recent films when it's a drama piece that you have someone singing a really like moody or depressed or emo version of a song that is supposed to be happy. And I know it's a wonderful world. You know, it'll take a song that should be happy and they'll sing it off key or in a minor key, or they'll sing it in a kind of disjointed way. You're like, oh, things are getting really, really weird now for this. So to give you an example of that, this is a parody SNL did last year, last October. It's a parody of the movie Joker. Which is an excellent film, so I hear. I didn't end up going and seeing it because it was funny. I had a lot going on, and I just didn't want to have something dark and depressing. It's so funny. After you have kids, you turn into such a softy. I mean, I used to watch like all kinds of dark, depressing films. Now it's like, I just want things to be happy. I want just happiness in life. I don't mind films that have some downbeats to them, but I wasn't that excited for Joker, though I do hear it was a good movie. So this is a Saturday Night Live did a parody of Joker. You know, it's like gritty, you know, we're all about gritty reboots now. And so Saturday Night Live did a gritty reboot parody trailer of Sesame Street, specifically about Oscar the Grouch from Sesame Street. And so this parody trailer actually really does cover just the typical gritty, dramatic trailers that we have nowadays. So I'll play a part of that.
From director Todd Phillips.
Sweep in the clouds away.
And the writer of Key is for Potty.
On my way, where the air is sweet. Can you tell me how?
favor. Would you call me the Grouch?
Brought to you by the letter R.
Scram!
So this, all the same gritty stuff, the moody song, the piano chords, the slow-mo dramatic shots. And that's where we're at with movie trailers today. And how will they continue and evolve? Well, you have to go to the movies to find out. And let's talk about some of the other interesting things in trailers you may not know about. All right, so some trailers use special shoot footage. So some trailers, they shoot things that are not going to be in the film, specifically just for the trailer itself. Now, you won't have people on set shooting things saying, hey, let's do this take so we have it for the trailer, because it's very expensive to do that. But they may design just a special shoot of something just for the trailer itself. A notable example of this was Terminator 2 Judgment Day. There was a trailer that showed this elaborate scene of a T-800, Model 800 Terminator, being assembled in a factory that never ended up in the final cut of the film itself. Now, sometimes what directors will do for trailers is they will take scenes that were on the cutting room floor. This happened a lot with Justice League. You look at the recent Warner Brothers film Justice League, which is terrible, by the way. I love Justice League, and I love the animated Justice League films. But you put it together, the greatest superheroes in the DC comic universe for their first live action film, and if that film is all right, it is a failure. And that's what it was. And in the trailer, if you go look at the trailer, then you watch the film, there's a lot of shots that were in that trailer that were probably, they were not shot just for the trailer. They were probably meant to be in the longer version of the film that got cut. And then someone noticed and said, hey, these are actually really cool shots. Maybe we should actually include them in the trailer itself. So you'll see that sometimes. So you'll see other cases where I love these kind of mini commercials that were filmed that are a trailer, but they're not just clips of the film put together. There's two examples. This first one comes from Hitchcock's Psycho, where the trailer was filmed specifically of Hitchcock just going. It's a weird trailer. I love it. It's so creepy and odd. It's just Alfred Hitchcock at the Bates Motel and the Bates House in the movie Psycho, and he just takes you through on a tour and talks to you about it, but there's just something always a little bit off about the whole thing, which is classic Hitchcock. So let me play some of that.
This motel also has, as an adjunct, an old house, which is, if I may say so, a little more sinister looking, less innocent than the motel itself. And in this house, the most dire, horrible events took place.
Well, what happened? Let me know. And then you're interested in the film. You know what's funny, actually? When I was growing up, this is so sad. The first time I saw Psycho was not the Hitchcock version. Ruined it for me. I saw the remake they did. I forget the name of the actor. He's the guy from Dodgeball, not Ben Stiller. Vince Vaughn. So it was the one with Vince Vaughn. And it was and that movie was a shot-for-shot remake of Psycho. An utterly pointless affair. Why would you do that? You had nothing to it. And so then I saw the original Psycho years later and was like, oh, wow, this is way better than what I saw with Vince Vaughn a while back. Another famous example of a trailer where it's kind of has special shoot footage. It has, this one has compilations of the movie, but interspersed with it is the director addressing the audience straight into the camera, telling them about the film. And that is the movie Maximum Overdrive from 1986. It was based on the book by Stephen King, and it's directed by Stephen King. And Stephen King is in the trailer talking to the audience, and he looks like and probably is on drugs. Like, his eyes are bulging. He just seems completely out of his mind. And Maximum Overdrive is a hilarious horror film about trucks and appliances coming to life and trying to kill everyone on Earth. And it's about a bunch of people who are stranded at a truck stop that's being encircled by these semi-trucks that have come to life and are trying to kill them. So classic, wonderful B-horror movie, Maximum Overdrive, starring Emilio Estevez and several other people. It's great. So this is the trailer, and it has Stephen King in it, the director, addressing the audience.
Hi. My name is Stephen King. I've written several motion pictures, but I want to tell you about a movie called Maximum Overdrive, which is the first one I've directed.
Wow!
It was my first picture as a director, and you know something? I sort of enjoyed it.
What is going on?
I don't know!
I just wanted someone to do Stephen King right.
You want a war? You got one.
I just want to get the hell out of here.
So come and spend some time with me and my friends at the Dixie Boy. Spend some time in the dark.
Please don't let us be in the dark.
Help me.
I'm going to scare the hell out of you.
And so that's basically the Maximum Overdrive trailer there. So another classic I'll put in the slot of bad movies. Well, they're not bad. They're not great. You'd have to appreciate them for what they are. Oh, another point when it comes to trailers is sometimes the studio that makes the trailers, they're making the trailer and the movie isn't done yet. They have to make the trailer to meet marketing deadlines and to build up buzz, because a lot of movies are being advertised now 9 months, a year in advance. And so the movie's not even done, or they have the shots, but they don't have all the special effects and the production elements in the shots themselves. So we see examples of this, like with Disney's Aladdin, the very first trailer that came out for Aladdin. The genie, played by Will Smith, people described it as nightmare fuel. Like, he just looked weird and off, and people didn't like it. And then when the actual movie came out, they reworked the special effects, and it looked way better. So you didn't notice it. It wasn't as, like, jarring. Another famous example recently is the Sonic the Hedgehog movie, which has not come out yet. But the very first trailer, Sonic the Hedgehog looked terrifying. He looked like a weird CGI creation. And the weird part was his eyes were wrong and his teeth were wrong. His teeth looked like he had like a senior citizen's dentures in his mouth, or like a human set of teeth inside of this animated hedgehog. And it don't look right. That ain't right. So then they re-released the trailer. They cut another version of the trailer and they did a lot more CGI work and got Sonic right. So those are examples of where a trailer house may have the movie, they may have some footage to work with, but it's not finished footage. So they're doing the best they can because the movie isn't done yet, yet they need to get a trailer out. Finally, one thing that I hate in trailers that happens are spoilers. Sometimes these spoilers are purposeful, that the reason the trailer gives away a key plot point or gives away an awesome shot is because the studio is worried that if not enough people come on opening weekend, the movie will tank. A lot of movies, their trajectory and momentum is based on opening weekend numbers. If they don't get a strong opening weekend, they're going to get pulled from theaters and the whole movie's going to sink. So these executives say, you know what, throw everything in the trailer we know is great, and then we'll get people in the seats, and that's what matters. Which is sad, because I love when I go and see a movie, I try not to watch trailers. It's hard. I love trailers for the art, but I hate that they spoil stuff, so I can't enjoy the film when I go in. So for example, with 1917, I watched just like a few seconds of the trailer. I didn't watch the whole thing. What's hard is I knew there was one shot with the guy running down No Man's Land, and I was waiting for like that shot to come up in the movie. So it's hard. I love watching them for the art, but if I can avoid movie trailers so that I can enjoy the movie itself, it's just so much of a better experience. So sometimes the studio will just put that in there. But I love, like, when I go to see a film, and imagine Avengers Endgame, spoiler alert, but that's okay. We're getting up on a year here almost. The scene where Thor is pinned down by Thanos and Captain America catches Mjolnir, his hammer, and brings down lightning on Thor. When Captain America catches Thor's hammer, I mean, we were going crazy in the movie theater opening night when we saw that. But imagine how awful it would be if that was in the trailer. It'd be like, oh, cool, and our expectations are deflated now. So sometimes that will happen. Other times, though, it's accidental. Like, you'll show something, a person editing the film, the trailer doesn't realize it. They show, like, a big spaceship exploding. The problem is, if you watch the film and you see people on the spaceship, you're like, oh, that spaceship's going to explode at some point. So sometimes it's accidental, sometimes it's purposeful. Two recent films that I don't understand why they did this gave away almost the key plot points in the film. First is Tom Hanks' film Castaway. The trailer shows him on a plane, and they're talking about him getting rescued and how they buried a coffin that was empty, a casket that was empty for him. And I was like, why would you do that? I mean, what if he never made it off the island? What if it was just Blue Lagoon? He just stays there with Brooke Shields or something. Man, that's a deep cut for some people who remember films back in like the 70s and 80s. Why would you do something like that? Now the whole movie's ruined for me. The other one is Terminator Genesis, where in the trailer reveals a key plot twist that John Connor is a Terminator. Terminator movies, rest in peace. No more Terminator movies. You guys don't know what you're doing with that. Other times, there's an example of when the studio, the trailer has done so well, they're worried that the movie can't keep up with it. This is an article on Vulture.com about Suicide Squad. So it says, remember how that first trailer for Suicide Squad? Suicide Squad is a comic book adaptation. Suicide Squad were a group of villains that the government put together to accomplish covert missions for them. And it's an awesome comic. They've got some pretty decent animated films, but the movie is just terrible. And it was hard because WB, Warner Brothers, did Justice League, and they thought every superhero movie had to be dark and gritty because The Dark Knight was dark and gritty. So Batman v Superman was panned because, you know, well, it's just kind of dark and moody and we don't like it. So they were panicking because Suicide Squad was really dark and moody, but the trailer was really bright and vibrant, and it had that song, Ballroom Blitz, I think is what it's called. Ballroom Blitz, da-na-na-na-na-na. Ballroom Blitz, da-na-na-na-na-na. I think that's how the song goes. You know, and it's just lively and colorful, but the movie was nothing like it. So they hired that trailer house to recut the film. What it says here, let's see. A key concern for Warner executives was that Suicide Squad didn't deliver on the fun, edgy tone promised in the strong teaser trailer for the film. So Warner set out working on a different cut with an assist from Trailer Park, the company that had made the teaser. So this was a case where the movie trailer company, the company that makes movie trailers, was brought in to actually fix the film, to make the film more like the trailer and what they were selling to people. Finally, if you like movie trailers, I highly recommend another comedy series that I love on YouTube on the Screen Junkies channel. It's called Honest Trailers, and they have a guy who does it's a parody of movie trailers, and they do it in the style of the 90s Don LaFontaine movie voice guy, in a world where, but they're very self-aware and very clever with how they do that. They do it for movies, and they also do it for TV shows as well. So I picked just one example to give you an idea of how honest trailers are, but they're hilarious to watch. I love them. They've done like 300 over 300 Honest Trailers. Definitely a good way to waste a lot of time on YouTube if you go to check out Honest Trailers. Here's the one they did for Star Trek The Next Generation. I'm going to play just a part of it so you can get kind of what they're saying. If you've ever seen Star Trek Next Generation, hopefully this will definitely resonate with you. Even if you haven't, you get an idea of the tone of how the Honest Trailers work. So here's the Honest Trailer for the television series Star Trek The Next Generation.
So relive one of the greatest pieces of science fiction ever created, full of unforgettable moments and a few that they wish you would forget, like the time the gang met Mark Twain.
Shame on you, Mr. Clemens, shame.
The one where Captain Picard turns into a kid.
I need to see him now. Now, 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 now.
And the episode where Dr. Crusher inherits a lamp that contains a space ghost.
Dinner light that candle.
Why not?
It'll bring the ghost.
Who she porks until it reanimates her grandmother's corpse and attacks her friends.
Beverly, it's all right.
You're not Nana. Nana's dead.
Are we sure this is as good as we remember? Starring original series cameos, Data Interrupted.
And what Klingons do to their children?
Data, I am not talking about parenting.
He betrayed the colonists and would have betrayed the Enterprise as well had I not...
Shh!
The unhatched eggs of a large scaleless...
Later, Data.
Death fakeouts.
Geordi's dead. We're dead, Geordi.
We are not dead.
You're dead.
He's dead. You killed him. No!
Doppelgangers. Picard mean faces. Acting!
No! You've just committed an act of utter barbarity! Not good enough, damn it! Not good enough! Yeah? Oh! Four lives! I do love you!
Anyway, I'm not much of an actor.
Starring. So the starring, they're always making fun of what's in the film. But I just love that starring. Acting, Jean-Luc Picard. It just takes it so seriously, and I love it. I love it so much. I'm a big Next Generation fan, so maybe I'll do Star Trek here on a Free For All Friday pretty soon. It might be a good one to bring in some of my other colleagues. Maybe Todd Aguilaro, our editor of the press, or Jimmy Akin. Actually, maybe I will do a sci-fi roundtable. That might be a fun one for a Free for All Friday. I don't know. But hey, if you are a subscriber to TrendhornPodcast.com, go to TrendhornPodcast.com, leave your thoughts, comments under the episode. If you would love to see a sci-fi roundtable with me, Jimmy Akin, and Todd Aguilaro for an episode, that's quite all right with me. Otherwise, we will continue to have all other kinds of fun topics, not just film and television, but all kinds of esoteric things that I hope will edify you, or at least have you something interesting to think about as our week draws to a close. So thank you all very much for joining me today on Free for All Friday. I hope you have a blessed day and a very blessed weekend. Take care, everyone.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrendhornPodcast.com.